This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana, and both of us are now on the mainland in the South Island. Barry's still tripping around somewhere, and I am now in Dunedin. And the Chiefs play here, Barry. They take on the Highlanders. No, they play this Saturday.
Okay.
You're obviously not a rugby person.
Well, I am, but not that. I haven't seen any news, and you talk about being at the table. I haven't seen a table for I don't know how long. And
oh, my goodness.
Here I am. I'm doing this outside, actually, tonight, guys. As the sun goes down, we're going to get dark here soon.
Okay, so where are you?
If I tell you, you won't be any the wiser. I'm in Pukekura, but this isn't the North Island Pukekura. This is the Pukekura that's south of Hokitika and Ross on the way to Haast.
Wow. Anything fancy to see along your travels there?
Oh, yeah. We stopped at Greymouth and we saw some Hector's dolphins, and we actually were lucky enough to see them, although they weren't jumping out of the water, but we could see them. There were heaps of them there, these Hector's dolphins at the mouth of the Grey Wirras. That was pretty exciting stuff. And we moved on from there, and we went to the Pancake Rocks. I wish I could remember the name of them, but I can't. The Pancake Rocks, and we went there, had a look at those. They're awesome. They're all these amazing rock formations. And even more, as you can imagine, I would really like this part, Mariana, was the blowhole part.
Yeah, you Google it, people. You wouldn't believe they're quite stunning, aren't they?
Oh, I was. So the water would just come out this blowhole and sort of explode into the air. It was quite amazing. Really was. That was the two sights of the day.
Okay. So tell me, any bridge?
Bridge? What's that? Oh, yeah, I have one more thing that I have to tell you about.
What?
The most exciting thing of all today. This is the third exciting thing in one day. We visited this most amazing town you've ever heard of.
What's it called?
Barrytown.
No way.
And I've taken a photo for you.
Oh.
And it's of me. And I'm pointing up towards the sign of the Barrytown Settlers Hall.
Funny.
I said to Jenny, how many people do you think there are in this town called Barry? And she said, probably none. And I said, there must be at least one.
Yeah. I remember traveling with my squash team. We were going down to Masterton, and one of our ladies in the team, her nickname was Bunny, and she did exactly the same. When we were driving through Bunny Thorpe, we stopped, jumped out and took a photo, both thumbs up. I don't think there's any town around with my name. You're going to have to text me that picture so I can put it up.
Done it right now. I want you to have a look at it while we're talking, because you'll be
God.
So impressed.
Stand by, people. Hard case. The one and only Barrytown Settlers Hall. The listeners are going to love this.
And after this, I expect all of the bridge players that travel down the West Coast will flock to the Barrytown Settlers Hall.
Now, I have a question for you, and it is about the rule of seven. What can you tell me about the rule of seven in bridge?
It's a technique when you're a declarer that's used when you're playing in no trumps to determine how many times you have to hold up. You have to duck an ace to exhaust the declarer's communication in a suit. So if they lead the suit and you think, oh my God, I've only got one stopper here, I've got three to the ace and two small. The rule of seven is calculated by subtracting the total combined number of cards in that suit held by the declarer and dummy from seven. So in the situation I gave you where you've got three in your hand and two in the other, that's five, you should duck twice.
Oh, right. And
so they've got eight cards between them. If they break 5-3, if they break 4-4, there's nothing you can do, but at least you're only going to lose one more trick. If they break 5-3, you need to duck twice so that if the person with three is the one that gets in, he or she won't have any more cards in that suit to lead.
To throw it back. Yeah, okay.
But if you've got six cards in the suit, you only have to duck once. I don't know if you can see why, but if you duck once, if they're 5-2, they won't be able to play another one. Whereas if they're 4-3, they will. But at least they'll only be able to cash two tricks.
Okay.
And if you've got seven cards between the two hands, you don't have to duck at all. So if you've got four to the ace and three to the six, that's seven. Deduct that from seven, and that's naught. So that's the rule of seven for you. Have you
Okay.
got some other rule of seven that you're not telling me about?
Well, I have. On Facebook, it looks like a lot of bridge clubs are posting that they're having their beginner lessons. So I've received a Rewa down Wellington region. They've sent some. I believe Hamilton are going to put something on Facebook too. So I had a quick look and I found out that there is actually a rule of seven in marketing. It is a principle. It suggests that a prospective customer needs to see or hear a brand's message at least seven times before they're even ready to take action or make a purchase. So all of us Bridge Club people that are sending out whatever it is via Facebook or one advert, you actually have to do it seven times, Barry. The concept, it's about mere exposure is not enough. It's got to be repeated. What do you think about that one?
Oh, it sounds like if you've got a seven card suit, you need to bid it seven times before partner will believe you.
Yeah. So it's like one diamond, two diamonds, three. Yeah. So that's my tip, bridge clubs. If you're only going to do it once, I don't think it's enough. So you have to do it seven times and then they'll get familiar and think, oh, that's right. Fingers crossed, maybe it's something that we should be thinking more of. Don't do the one-off.
Speaking of bridge clubs, did you read the piece in Peter Newell's very first newsletter for the year where he mentioned that Anne Barraclough mentioned that there are 11 clubs that are still not, what am
Oh,
I looking
haven't
for?
transferred across to the new
Transferred across.
incorporated societies.
Yeah, that's it. There's still 11 clubs. So let's hope they all make it in time.
Well, it's going to be pretty dire because I don't think you get any more leeway after it. And it virtually means that you have to close down and then you have to give all your assets and your money to another organisation that is similar. I mean, here's hoping that they're close to Hamilton.
They're still all working on it, I understand.
Oh, that'll be great. I can't stress how important it is because it's going to be an absolute nightmare if you don't meet it. And what was the final date?
Oh, is it the 1st of
Okay,
April? I'm not
31st of
100%
March
sure on that,
sounds
but yeah.
okay. So they've still got a month and a bit to go.
Yeah, but
Yep.
that's not that long when you're trying to do something like that, is it?
That's right. Whaiakine. Coming up next, we're at the courthouse.
Court's in session. The court's in session now. Here come the judge. Here come
G'day,
the
Judge
judge.
Julie.
Hi, how is everybody?
We're
We're
recovered
good.
now that we've finished looking at Barry's photo.
I'm in France, Joseph, recording this. Here's a director's question all the way from the icebergs. I'm on the Glacier Highway, and this is what happens. Things could
Right.
get a bit icy, I suppose, in this situation.
Yep.
Julie, what do you do when you've got a newbie, or even more than one newbie? You might have quite a few of them in a session. They're coming in for maybe only their first or second session of bridge. They're really nervous. They're probably doing the wrong thing and not knowing. How do you handle that in your role as a friendly director?
Yeah, friendly.
Okay. So I'm reprising friendly. Okay. It's difficult. It's a club that, it's an issue that smaller clubs have, where bigger clubs can have a dedicated beginner session where they can educate players about calling the director. And one of the things that you hear very often from clubs around the country, or from people in clubs around the country, to be fair, is that they don't want the director to be called for beginners because it's off-putting and it upsets them. And that problem creates big problems when they move into other areas. Like any game, when we've got the paraphernalia, the bidding pads or bidding boxes, alerts, and all of those things that we have, and the rules, we need to be part of the education at some point. We hit this problem when they first come out, and we also hit it later on with more stuff like hesitations and misexplanations when people are more experienced, and all of a sudden they're expected to know what to do and what not to
This
do.
Free FM
We need to
podcast
have
was brought to
a
you with
education
support from New
program in the
Zealand On
club,
Air.
preferably to help transition. But when we have a new person coming in, first of all, the director is their friend. Most directors, when you know that somebody is brand new, is going to be tolerant about what happens. But for all of that, because you're new, you don't get to play different rules for the game. All right? If you allow people to talk away furiously about things, not only is it disruptive, how is it going to teach them that they're actually not meant to do it? So you want to be tolerant, and you want the players in the room definitely to be tolerant, because it's difficult. The thing is that maybe if you're partnering, buddying a new person or someone that's very nervous, because people talk a lot when they get nervous, or some people do, that increases the issue. Is to say that during the auction in the play, you just are not allowed to have a conversation with your partner about what you are or are not doing. Clubs may or may not allow reference to the cheat sheets from the lessons, which helps a lot as you're settling in, because if you're panicking, you've got something to refer to help you with what you do for a certain amount of time, 3 months or 6 months or whatever the case may be. The other way is some clubs might have a system where you get a green card, green systems. So people have to be aware that you're a brand new player and not play really weird stuff. There's a lot of problems in small clubs about disparity of levels, about handicapping systems, about people that are competitive and people that are social, that create just really, really big problems at times. Right. And we need tolerance is really the first thing. Newsletters explaining, we've got a new group of beginners coming out. A sheet of paper is an intro to when you play your first session within a mixed group, the do's and don'ts. Keep it simple. You want it to be like an A5, like do this, don't talk all the time. Don't tell your partner, what do I do because I've got blah, blah, blah in my hands, right?
Yep.
You can make it extreme to make it clear. Just simple things to give hints and help. I actually think that you're better off having an experienced director to having an inexperienced director in a lot of ways, because there's more experience, is generally more relaxed, so you can be a bit friendlier about what you're doing.
Okay. I had this person ask me a question, and it was about the bidding pad. When they were at the table, one of the players, after the first round had been finished, took the bidding pad, ripped off the section, and started rereading the bidding sequence. This person came up to me and asked me if they were allowed to do that. Okay. I said, after round one, it gets turned over and it remains turned over. So you have to use your memory. And they said, well, this person said they wanted to learn for themselves. And so they were thinking, and they were actually mumbling what the auction was. And we didn't think it was right, but they chose not to do anything about it.
Okay. So the law of bridge, I mean, when we had spoken bidding, you're allowed to have a review of the auction up until you play to the first trick.
Right.
Right. When you're declarer, that means when you play from dummy, you have played to the first trick. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, the auction, the pad, or the bidding box cut will get turned over or removed after three hands have played to that first trick.
Yep.
In all fairness, most of the time it's going to be there for the whole of trick one. All right. Yes. Then you turn it over. Some people will want to keep the bidding pad. They'll take it away and they might keep it, write down the board number on it. No problem with that, except that you're not allowed to refer to it at all, no memory aids, as you pointed out. You are always allowed to know the contract. Anyone at the table, including dummy, can tell you what the contract does. And the contract has to be blah, doubled, or whatever.
Yeah.
At Auckland, with new people, when they first come out, we allow that bidding box card can have the contract sitting there on the table for the new players. We can do that because we don't have it such a big mix, because we've got enough sessions for intro to the game. And people don't want to say they've forgotten what they're playing. And no matter how much you say to people that whatever you're doing, someone far better than you has done a lot worse, they do one thing wrong and often fall apart. So tolerance, right? People shouldn't be looking and reading and mumbling at the table about anything, really. I mean, that's just not appropriate. And some of the ways you can do that is at the beginner's lessons. You allow free range talking at beginner's lessons, but maybe free range talking being on target. There's so much we teach that we don't teach the etiquette and the ethics particularly well at the very first stages, because we're just trying to get them to be able to bid and to not double their partner, which is illegal, those sorts of things. It's a really hard issue. As I said, hint sheets, maybe newsletters that have something about lead out of turn, what do you do, for goodness sake? Just little wee things like that, so people can read a bit about the rules. calling the director is not saying you've done something appallingly bad. Calling the director is calling the referee because the referee can't see everything that's happening all the time. And it is not a reflection on anyone's behaviour or on what they're doing particularly. It's just applying the rules of the game appropriately.
I don't think they are aware of what you say is like the director is your friend. They see it more as a bad thing that's happened at the table and they don't want to get in trouble or they may be embarrassed.
You want to have someone they can talk to, and then you want to have preferably a director that, well, I mean, Patrick writes out screeds and screeds of notes and gives them to people, no matter what level they are. When something goes, when he makes a ruling at the table and it's not clear that people understand, he will go and give you an A4 sheet later on. You need someone, preferably directing, who is able to be approachable to explain, even if it's not at the time of the thing happening, if it's at the end of the session. It gives the director the opportunity to say, well, if you had called me, this is what would have happened, right? But since you didn't, I can't do anything now. Okay. So, or a mentor or someone available who can take on that role so that you can do it as a learning thing. I
That
mean,
sounds good.
look, really, really difficult, really, really hard. We do 12, 13 lessons or 10 or whatever it is. We get them into the room. We get them in a big group and they come into other players that are a lot stronger, that are doing weird and wonderful things because it's all mixed. It's just really, really difficult.
I guess the most common one is halfway through the auction. Oh, I don't know what to do. Now, they clearly shouldn't say that, but it's pretty obvious they don't know what to do.
I just tell everyone, whatever you're doing, just do it confidently because if it's wrong and you're confident, your opponents don't know.
True. Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Well, thank you for that. Hey, and next week we celebrate episode 400. So there
Wow.
should be coffee, cake, and a candle, the three C's in Christchurch.
Depends where we all are.
I've got one more quick question for the judge. What do you do if you're travelling down the West Coast and you've forgotten your system card?
You've got it online everywhere. If you go back, I'm sure in the mixed teams.
We can't print anything, is our problem. But
Oh,
anyway,
yeah, email it to me. I'll print it for you.
you heard it on the Bridge Zone. You can email Judge Julian, she'll print your system card off for you.
Ah, but if it was bailiff, do you think he'd say, well, I think you have to go back to Hamilton and get
Well,
it?
in all
Probably would. He
fairness, since
probably
they're
would.
our teammates, we actually want them to be happy and comfortable at least for this weekend. Okay?
Yes, absolutely. All right, then. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you,
Bye-bye.
Julie.
Oh, yes, our friend Phil Noy, just happens I'm in Dunedin and he reached out. They actually have a big celebration coming up soon, Barry.
What are they doing?
Otago Bridge Club is about to reach 90 and they're going to
90.
celebrate that in April. How cool is that?
So what are they doing? They're having a, I'm
Sounds
just
like they're
having a
going to
look at
have a
it.
bridge session on Friday afternoon at 1 p.m.
Very important thing they've put on the poster about that. A subject dear to your heart. They're going to have the bar open after bridge.
I know, isn't that good? So they're going to have a session on Friday afternoon, starting at 1 o'clock, and then on Saturday there's a teams tournament, which is a 5A. And if there's enough, there's going to be an intermediate and a juniors tournament, which will be an 8B. 7 p.m. dinner with a two-course buffet. That's pretty cool. And on Sunday, what are they doing?
They've got a 5A pairs tournament and talking about having an intermediate and a junior as well.
So that's pretty cool.
I
So
was
if
just thinking, and then I realized that that was ridiculous. I thought, well, I wonder if there'll be any foundation members there, but I guess no, there won't be after 90 years.
I
Anyway.
bet you they'd have the next generations that will be able to support that celebration. That's pretty cool. Do you know who the oldest bridge club is in the country?
I reckon Otago must be close.
Really? That'll
I
be
don't know.
interesting, listeners.
I don't know. Maybe some of our listeners will email us and let us know how old their club is. Bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com.
Yeah, let's see who's got the oldest club in the country. So in 22, we turned 70. That's the Hamilton Contract Bridge Club. We did actually celebrate that a year later because of COVID, which means next year we'll be turning 75. So we'll probably have another big, Labour weekend. Actually, that works in well, because I have another thing. We may have spoke about this before. My friend and your friend from overseas in Cairns, William Van Bakel, we've come up with this idea that perhaps Cairns and Hamilton could become sister cities and actually send members or members travel over there to their club to play, and then they could come over to our club to play. Now, it just happens that Cairns are involved every 4 years to host the Great Barrier Reef Tournament, and that tournament is actually next year when they'll be hosting, so in 2027. Because it goes between the four, isn't it? There's Mackay, Cairns. What's the one starting with Y?
Yeppoon.
Yeppoon?
I've been to Yeppoon.
There's one more. Townsville. There we go.
Oh, that's it.
We're thinking of potentially setting up a, you come to our place and play and we'll come to your place and play. So between Cairns, Mackay, Townsville and Yeppoon, they all host the Barrier Reef, and it's Cairns' turn in 2027 to do that. And Hamilton will turn 75 Labour weekend next year. So that'll be a perfect time for them to come in and come to our 3-day tournament.
William's probably well aware that I've already been to Cairns more than once. So, yeah, you know, they owe us.
They owe us.
If you're listening, William, you owe us. I've been at least a couple of times to Cairns. In fact, I think it's at least 3 or 4.
Ah, well, there you go. That could be a thing. And of course, we're thinking about the potential for billeting, so that it's just to travel and food costs, which is awesome. Remember the last time that we went to Cairnsbury and we didn't even know that we were staying in the same complex until a couple of days later? That was funny.
I tell you what, it's no hardship to go to Cairns to the Barrier Cree Congress. It's a great weekend, a great time.
Yeah, and it'll be awesome if they come over to us. And to close the show, we are at the Gin Club. Juniors, intermediates and novice. Last week, Mr. Gin, that's Ross Longney, and myself spoke with Alex Meyer. Alex is coming off a great 2025 and an awesome start to 2026. Here's segment two of our chat.
Most of our New Zealand gin players, of course, have never played in Australia. And is it different there in any way from, let's say, Palmerston North Congress?
You have to alert two diamonds, response to stamen. I think part of that is because most Australians play a 15 to 18 no trump. And due to that, they now play two clubs as a sort of puppet stamen, yeah, except it also acts as a semi-range finder. So it's got a whole bunch of different artificial responses. But other than that, Australians seem to be far more open to unusual methods, or at least in my experience, it seemed like one.
Very interesting. What's up now for Alex Meyer? What's happening for the rest of this year? Any overseas trips on the horizon or goal?
I currently have no plans. Both Jack James and Kevin, who have been playing with me quite regularly to help me get better, which is absolutely amazing of them. So lucky to have so many people who are so welcome to help me. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to be playing with them. No tournaments in the future yet, but I have no doubt that I will be signed up for them.
Absolutely. Sure will be. Your Open aspirations are almost like done and dusted, because at the moment you have 49.35 points. So I would imagine very, very soon you'll go into Provincial Master. But it still means under the New Zealand system that you will be able to play in the Intermediate Division Act for all of this year, and including Congress. So us gin members will very much enjoy and look forward to meeting you in Palmerston North. You're also doing director's exams, aren't you?
Yes, so I've already been a club director since about August last year, but I am quite keen to take on the tournament director's course and do all of the qualifications for that. I find directing quite interesting in terms of how all of the rulings and laws work. There's quite a bit that's up to interpretation.
Yeah. That's cool. Hey, being a youth player, what do you think is a good thing for getting more youth players Why do you think that our numbers aren't as high at the moment?
I think a lot of it is just there aren't nearly enough youth events in New Zealand at the moment. Really, all
Right.
we have is the youth weekend. There aren't any tournaments or weeks, like even just regional things that are dedicated entirely to youth. Part of the reason of that is that there aren't many youth in New Zealand at the moment. But it would be quite cool to see the under 31 events that I saw in Australia, where anyone under 31 can join in all of these regional events,
Yes.
especially the youth week in Canberra. It just seemed like so many people came from so many different places and they were used to all the youth events. It was like, oh yes, this is something that happens multiple times in a year. It was incredibly cool to see how much it's being supported over there. I'd quite like to see that over here.
It's quite difficult, really, because when you play the numbers game in terms of population, to be able to compete at that next higher level, regardless of what age group you're in or what grade you're in, New Zealand, I think, really punch above their weight. Would you agree with that?
Somewhat, yes. I think New Zealand does well for what it's got. I do always believe there is room for improvement.
I have one small question to ask, Alex. You are famous for the small giraffe that you always bring to the bridge table. How did this come about? I've seen Kevin Hu walking around with it on his head at various tournaments. You are famous for it. Tell us a little bit about the
You
giraffe
steal.
background.
It's mostly a comfort thing. As I mentioned previously, I can get quite stressed. Part of that is when there's lots of people around me, especially what I've found is after you win a big event, lots of people like talking to you, and I
Yes.
don't particularly want to be talked to. I think it's a cultural thing in New Zealand, people coming up and like touching you on the shoulder, giving you closeness and proximity. Except I don't particularly like that. Those sort of things can stress me out quite a bit. And I found just carrying around my little giraffes helps de-stress me, which then also helps me deal with that like close proximity, the conversations with people. It
Yeah, he
also
is.
works as a projectile of partner misbids, which is always good.
That's a good tip. Beware of the giraffe.
I have had Kevin throw my giraffe at me multiple times. Not saying it wasn't deserved, though.
Join us next week for the last of our chat with up-and-coming youth player Alex Meyer. That's all we've got for you this week, folks. Take care, and we'll see you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.